So welcome to the Language of the Heart podcast. I'm here with my good friend Sean Zoggy. Sean and I have known each other since, what, like 2001?
Yeah, I think so, like 18, like, 19 years ago.
Yeah, man, back in high school, goddamn. Sean, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, my name is Sean Zoggy, and I've been Justin's friend for a very long time. We haven't actually seen each other in more than what?
Over 10 years. Connected on Facebook, though?
Yeah, we've been keeping in touch on Facebook. He moved away to Hawaii for a period of time. Right. We both had kids. We both had a lot of changes in our lives. And it's really good to see him after all these years. And today we're going to talk about a little bit of everything. We're going to talk about the news. We're going to talk about secular morality. We're going to just shoot it from the hip. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Just living a wild and blessed life. So I know nothing about secular morality. Sean brought up that topic, and you know, something that you requested, you wanted to talk about because you're interested in starting your own podcast. And it's something that I have very little experience in, but I just decided that I'm going to commit to putting out content, you know. And so I got really excited, sent a text to like a few friends that I gain or seek advice or guidance from, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you were one of the people that responded. And so secular morality, what is that?
So pretty much, I'd like to compare secular morality versus biblical morality. And what that means is that, where do your morals come from?
Right.
Your base morals, like, where's the origin of your morals? Do your morals come from a secular way, or do they come straight from the Bible? Like, everybody knows from the Bible, or if it's the Torah or it's the Quran, they do teach a lot about morality. They also...
So obviously morality is someone's morals.
Exactly.
So secular means...
Without religion.
Without religion. God, yes. Okay. So we're talking about morals outside of religion.
Exactly.
And how people develop or determine what their morals are.
And do you really need religion to be moral? Do you really need God to be moral? See, the thing is that a lot of people say that their morality comes straight from the Bible, the Quran, the Torah. You know, the issue I have with that is that at the same time, all these books do promote things like slavery, incest, racism, hate. So if you really want to get your morals from those books, you really do need to cherry pick. And I understand that thousands of years ago, you know, before we had the internet, before, you know, we really knew about life and where our morals came from, people relied on these books to guide them, to teach them how to be a good people. You know, don't sleep with your neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
do not kill.
Yeah. And everything was passed down through word of mouth.
Exactly.
You know, from whether it's in the home or, you know, religious avenues, you know, from
no
the pastor
verification.
Or teachers or whatever.
Exactly.
And so I don't think that, I mean, God, I wasn't around 1,000 years ago or 100 years ago, but it kind of seems like there was a very straight line of thinking if you wanted to be continually accepted.
For sure.
Within your same community.
For sure.
So there wasn't a lot of room of independence or questioning things, because you would immediately be outcast, you know?
For sure. There's a lot of social pressure indeed to live your life that certain way. But how about now? You know, it's 2018 and we live in a world with a lot of adversity. And at the same time, a lot of people today claim that their morality and their way of life comes from the Bible, comes from the Torah, comes from the Quran. And without that, they wouldn't know how to be a good person. Without that, they wouldn't have these instinctual desires to, you know, be a good person. They would go rape, steal, and kill. Me personally, if I'm an atheist, I've never believed in any sort of God or any sort of religion, even though I came from a religious background. Both of my parents are Jewish. Their parents were very Orthodox Jewish. And, you know, that's the background they came from. So I grew up, you know, looking around, seeing how everybody was, you know, living their life religiously. And I told myself, you know, you really don't need religion to be a good person. You know, I don't want to be raped, so I'm not going to rape somebody else.
Right. But that's a very extreme, you know, subsection of
For
what
sure.
we're talking about. I think before you even get to that point, I mean, I would personally think that somebody would have to experience extreme trauma in order to commit something like that. But for me, it's like as simple as lying, you know, on any level, even a very small level, you know, like how do you determine, how does one determine when that's okay and when that's not okay? And for me, you know, everything that I have to contribute on this topic is from personal experience, right?
For sure.
And I really wonder, because I don't have any, you know, like factual evidence, but I wonder if it's like, if it's a matter of nature versus nurture, you know, like are we born pure good people, or are we kind of born neutral, and then depending on how we're raised and what we experience early on in life determines what, you know, how we gauge what's right and what's wrong, you know what I mean? And I think that it can get very confusing because society puts a lot of pressure on us to be very self-seeking and you know, want to obtain for ourselves, right? That way we can kind of show off and keep up with the Joneses, which is something that's very much so part of our culture. And I think that that can absolutely lead into being, you know, dishonest or you know, envious, or, you know, like I like to use the seven deadly sins as kind of like a blanket character defect list, because it's just easier and it's more widely understood. So when I am self-seeking, or when I'm only thinking for myself, then I'm absolutely more prone to be like envious or coveting or, you know, whatever it might be, because I think that I might be doing what's best for me, you know. But it's not until I stop and look at my motives and look at what I'm trying to achieve that I'm able to like analyze, okay, like where am I coming from? What place am I coming from inside of myself? Am I coming from a place of love, or am I coming from a place of fear? Definitely.
So it's safe to say that your morals and your morality came from a pure secular source.
Absolutely. Mine do not come from religion.
Very good. I also wanted to...
But I do want to add that, like, there was a period of my life where I went to church and I was very, very involved in Bible study twice a week and all that. And I think Jesus and, like, what the stories about him and what he did directly are dope. And I'm talking about, like, the love and the care that he showed people that were outcasts, you know, whores or thieves or whatever it might be. I think that's rad, because I think that we absolutely have deep levels of compassion and empathy for others. But we have been so conditioned to judge people, you know, and think that, oh, they're doing something that I wouldn't do, so therefore they're wrong. Definitely. And therefore I need to stay away from them and project them as like this evil or bad person instead of wanting to help them, right?
Definitely.
I don't think that, like there was this one story that stood out to me in the Bible, and I don't remember what part of the Bible it was in, but it says something about like if a man fights with his neighbor and the wife gets involved and like grabs the man's genitals, then you can cut her hand off.
I just thought that was
absolutely fucking ridiculous. I thought it was interesting because the Bible has some interesting stuff to say, but I mean, like I do my best to come from a place of like helpfulness and like thinking of what I can do for other people.
Definitely.
You know, like if I'm thinking like that, then I know that I'm doing okay and I don't have anything else to worry about.
If you come from a place of love, compassion, and understanding, you really can't go wrong.
Right.
So I also wanted to talk to you about some stuff that's on the news right now.
Totally.
I'm not sure if you've been following this, but there's been a lot of controversy around the NFL and the national anthem. And, you know, I just want to say that if there was such a thing as a douchebag award of the year, it would definitely go to this guy, Colin Kaepernick. Like, what a douchebag this guy is. And for the people and yourself that might not be very familiar with the story, you know, let me give you a little history.
Please.
He was a very... You know, a very good...
Before you go on, I just want to say that I'm probably going to disagree with everything you're about to say, but I'm going to give you the freedom to express yourself.
Thank you. It is your podcast, and I appreciate
that. I just want all my listeners to know that I do not agree, but that's all right.
All right. So pretty much, this guy was a very good player on the San Francisco 49ers.
Right.
Okay. At a certain point, he decided to bring his personal political views onto the field. He was wearing socks with pictures of police officers portrayed as pigs. He was kneeling during the national anthem. He was encouraging other players to kneel during the national anthem. This got a lot of fans upset. This got a lot of sponsors upset. It cost the NFL a lot of money and a lot of fans. Once he was no longer signed and was a free agent, nobody wanted to sign him. Like none of the teams wanted to sign him.
Right.
And, you know, it got so bad that he actually went ahead and he hired a prominent criminal defense attorney, Mark Garagos, and a fellow podcaster. He has a really good podcast called Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One. Mm-hmm. I listen to it every week. He's a very smart person. But they're trying to prove collusion. That means all the teams came together and decided not to sign this guy, which supposedly is illegal. But my opinion is this. All right. I hate high gas prices. I just pumped gas and it was $4.10. Next week, I need to go to the dentist. While Dr. Arnett is in my mouth looking at my teeth, I'm not going to talk to him about high gas prices and start protesting protesting in the lobby. Because number one, he has nothing to do with it. And number two, it's not the correct venue, the correct platform. So what Colin Kaepernick is what his problem is police brutality. He believes that police brutality is a problem. And I agree, it is a problem. He believes that police use racism and sometimes single out black people. And, you know, I agree that's true. But how come he doesn't go, let's just say that he has a problem with the Los Angeles Police Department. How come he doesn't go do a protest outside the police department? Why? And the answer is because a lot of this he's doing for attention. Go ahead.
The opinion is he's doing this for attention.
Well, everything I'm stating, almost except for the facts, is my opinion. I believe he's doing it for attention.
Right.
So, and again, I personally think that not standing for the national anthem is disrespectful to the people that died for this country. And that's my opinion.
Okay.
All right. And I think that everyone who's playing a sport, like I go and watch the UFC fights sometimes live. You know, everybody stands for a national anthem. You know, it's 2-3 minutes. We gave thanks to the people that died for this country. And that's it. We play ball or we fight.
Right.
And that's it. I don't understand why this is a proper...
But why do we stand... So I have this weird experience. Every time I'm at a Dodger game or, Los Angeles Kings game.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, we live in greater Los Angeles. So those West are our side. Teams. Like I stand and I like take off my hat. And I have very differing opinions from what you just stated. But I well up like when I hear the national anthem, which is strange because like, you know, and I'm almost afraid to say this on such a public platform, but I don't think that like people have died for our country, for our freedom.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? So I think that when we stand for the national anthem, it's sort of like this false sense of patriotism because I'm doing something for my fucking country. Uh-huh. And I think that like if I were to do something for my country, I would go out there in some way. I don't really know how, you know, or what I'm willing to get involved in. But like I would do something to fight racism, or I would do something to fight like women's oppression.
Be proactive.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I remember watching this video that John Cena put out that talked about patriotism.
Okay.
You know, and he talked about, and I know it's John Cena is a fucking wrestler, he's a meathead or whatever, but like the video that I watched was very impactful for me. And he talked about like being there for your fellow man, you know, the average person, whether it doesn't matter what their sex, creed, or color is. Like, we all should enjoy the same freedoms and have the same opportunities. And in a sense that we do, but also in a sense we absolutely do not. And I believe, and it's just my opinion from my viewpoint and, the, you know, the videos that I've seen or the stories that I've heard, racism is still very alive and well.
For sure.
Oppression for women is still very alive and, and well. And like, those are just like what you're talking about with what Colin Kaepernick is doing. Like, those are things that need to be addressed, but also it's like being swept under the rug, like hush hush, we don't want to talk about it. No, exactly. It's not happening, you know, because we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world, which I'm not so sure is true.
And also I think there's been a movement. I can't pinpoint exactly when this happened, but it happened gradually. First, being a vegetarian was cool,
right?
And then being a vegan is cool.
Yes.
And after that, gluten-free. For some reason, gluten-free, yes. At some point it became cool to hate your country. It became cool.
Well, it's kind of always been cool.
I don't think so.
If you're in like that, God, I don't even know how to term it. I would think if like it's like a taboo field. You know what I mean? Like, look at the fucking hippie movement of the 1960s and protesting the Vietnam War.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like that. And I wouldn't say it was the cool thing to do, but absolutely there were. I don't know the numbers, hundreds of thousands, millions of people that were protesting it and part of that movement.
But it seems like every time somebody says something pro-America or pro-patriotism on a social platform, immediately people jump on them. Immediately people want to say, no, this country sucks, this is that. And what pisses me off is that all these people like Colin and other ball players and other actors that make millions and millions of dollars, who live in a country that supports them, they like to talk all this shit about, you know, equality, about the poor people. At the same time, they're saying it behind a double gated community.
Right.
Driving a Bentley, hundreds of thousands of cars, this, properties. If stuff like that is really important to you, why don't you sign over one paycheck to a charity?
Well, a lot of them do.
Yeah, they give some money for tax write-offs. How come you don't make a point? Like, I know it's not really popular to defend President Trump, but he said he would donate his salary to the education fund, and he did. He did.
Okay.
He donated his whole salary.
But so here's the thing. I mean, like, there is the old adage of do something nice for somebody else and don't tell anybody about it, right? So
exactly.
Who's to say, you know, all these athletes that are, you know, in your opinion, gaining attention to fighting a noble cause or whatever, aren't doing that and just keeping it hush hush, you know? It could be, because there's also other athletes that do, absolutely. They give back to the community, or, you know, they go back to, like, the neighborhoods that they grew up in and, you know, put money into the parks and help facilitate, you know, a healthy environment where these kids can go
for sure.
And play sports, or, you know, have tutoring or whatever, where it's, you know, safe. Yeah. and they can, you
a lot know, of them have kind of benefits. Open foundations, charities to do that, and that's very respectable. But my problem is that I think a lot of these actors and celebrities are using the wrong platform to express their opinion, and it's not really proactive. All they're doing is creating controversy. I mean, let's just say Mr. Colin, if he has a problem, again, with the San Francisco Police Department, there was a video of a police officer beating a black guy. Okay, if he goes and stands outside the police department and protests and gets a group of people and stands there on the blowhorn and talks, you know, I would respect him. I'd be like, wait, look at this guy. He said something. He's going straight to the source where the problem is, and he's being proactive.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion is, if he does that, he will have maybe a million or two eyes on him if it's reported in local news. More. If not more.
I mean, he's one of the greatest NFL players for our era. Well, at least
he's an asshole.
At least he's gotten a lot of attention. But I mean, like, that would absolutely gain a lot of coverage. For sure.
But he does it at a different event. He does it at a sporting event.
Uh-huh.
Why? Because at a sporting event, you're going to have millions and millions and millions of eyes on you.
Yeah.
Correct? So that's the problem that I have with him. And I'm really, really, really happy to see that he's getting a little taste of his own medicine, that no one's going to sign him, and that he went ahead and he did hire one of the best criminal attorneys. You know, this guy defended Chris Brown, Scott Peterson, and a whole other list of other celebrities. He's definitely the cream of the crop. And even with him, they're not able to prove this case of collusion,
right?
Which definitely goes without saying. There was a meeting with Roger Goodell and all the owners of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
It was a closed door meeting,
right?
Without any cameras, any phones, nothing allowed. And everybody knows that there was a conversation that was had to not sign this guy. This guy is bad for business. The sponsors hate this guy. The ratings are going down. And, you know, I'm glad. He should go do something else. He doesn't need to be a public figure. And I see these other magazines calling him Man of the Year, and I say, fuck those magazines.
Fucking A. I think it's great. Because like I said, like, the problems that we have in this country that are of that magnitude, racism, sexism, you know, we have college athletes that are getting away with rape, and, you know, judges are saying that they don't want the children to be robbed of a normal college experience. These things are getting swept under the rug, you know, and they're not being discussed. And I think that what he's doing is great. Now, when it comes to the platform that he's using,
uh-huh.
My question is, he's an employee.
For sure.
Right.
And if either of us go to our work tomorrow and start making noise and hooting and hollering,
right.
We're going to totally. Be thrown out on our ear.
Exactly. Exactly. So that my only, I wouldn't say concern, but my only question is, or it wouldn't even be a question, but like thoughts are, is like, if you're an employee and you want to keep your job, then you probably need to operate within the confines of what your contract says. Now, I don't think that was stipulated up until recently. The NFL just had a league-wide
that rule, you need to stand for national anthem. You're no longer
allowed to take a knee.
What's your opinion on that?
I think it's fucking bullshit. But at the same time, I don't know exactly how it works. I don't know how these contracts are outlined. But if, once again, if you're an employee, and I'm not saying, like, don't take a fucking knee and don't talk about, you know, the issues in our country. But if you're an employee, then you need to, like, perform as an employee.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, when I go to do my job, I go and I do my job. I don't bring my opinions into, if I think it's going to be helpful for the business, then I bring my opinions.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
But, like, I don't, like, I always think about what's going to be better for our business, you know? And try to operate within that. Like, I don't hawk loogies out of the van that has our name and logo on the side of it because it looks disgusting. And I don't want anyone to complain, first of all, and I also don't want to give my company a bad rep. But at the same time, it's tough because it's like, if you are a public figure and you do have that platform and you feel passionately about something, you know, it can go either way.
For sure. I wanted to talk a little bit about politics. I would like to say for the record that I am neither a Trump supporter or a Trump hater. Right. I'm neutral. I love my country. You know, my parents came here as immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only place I know.
When you say you love your country, yeah, instead of like letting it be a blanket statement, because I feel like a lot of people like, oh, we live in America and America and fucking
America.
America's so great. Like, well, what exactly is it about our country that is so great? Instead of just saying,
one of it is right here, what we're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Freedom of speech,
right.
Freedom of expression.
Which is absolutely something that can be part of the conversation that involves Colin Kaepernick.
Right? Exactly.
Definitely. Or not, though. That's what I'm saying. Like, I can't speak too much on this because I don't know the confines of the contract.
Yeah.
Because as an employee, I don't really think that I have freedom of speech when I'm on the clock, you know? And so if he's taking a knee at a football game,
yeah,
then he's absolutely on the clock.
So another problem that I have, and this goes into my other... This goes back to my other argument about how people use different platforms to prove their point or they're fighting the wrong battle. The presidency, okay? If people are not happy with President Trump and the fact that he got elected, personally, I think the correct way to go around it is to dispute and fight the electoral system. You know, if the electoral system didn't exist, Al Gore would have been our president.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have changed the course of history. We probably,
absolutely,
the Bushes probably wouldn't have been in office. We wouldn't have gone to war. A, B, and Z. Okay, there was a big lawsuit, I don't know if you remember, when Al Gore was running for president, he won the majority, but he lost the electoral votes.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to do a recount in Florida two or three times. It went to the Supreme Court and eventually he lost, and we know what happened to him. He disappeared from the news, he disappeared from the internet, and nobody knows what he's doing right now. And now we see the same thing here. They say that Hillary Clinton won the majority,
right,
of votes in the United States. But President Trump won because of the electoral system that we have, which I don't really agree with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it should be based on the majority of the vote. And a lot of people say, well, the reason why we have the electoral system is that a small state like Iowa shouldn't have little power, in compared to a state like California. But that shouldn't even be an issue. It should be based on the popular vote, and that person should be president. If people are elected that way, I think it gives people a less chance to argue, a less chance to hate the president, a less chance.
Well, I disagree with you because people, I mean, fuck, man. Like, we always need drama, right?
Always.
And when we're given two choices, we're going to fucking be sheep and pick one of two, right? So most of us, myself included sometimes, are fucking sore losers. And so when our choice doesn't win, we gripe about it, right? So, like, no one's... I mean, if somebody, like, loses, like a lot of people did, you know, when the Democratic Party didn't win, they're going to fucking complain. And they're going to use whatever they can to complain. And it's always like that. And it's probably always going to be like that. Because, well, I just personally believe that we live in a very sick society. you know?
But how come in the conversations, you don't hear anything about the voting system? You don't hear anything about the electoral system? Because that's the root.
That's not what's shown. What's shown is person A and person B. And here's the bad stuff about person A, and here's the bad stuff about person B, and here's the good stuff about person A, and here's the good stuff about person B. And people just take what they want. So if people
fucking... They're cherry picking.
Exactly.
Just like in the Bible.
To justify their own morality. Beliefs. Yes, absolutely. I don't think that we as a society teach very important things like open-mindedness and like humility. You know what I mean? Like, sure. There's just so much fucking judgment and people being condescending, whatever that word is, that like we just want to justify our own shit. You know what I mean? And like, I'll do it. Like, I'll judge somebody who's not being kind to somebody that I think deserves kindness. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because I believe in like, in that kind
don't
of shit.
Don't be nice to that guy. Fuck
him. No. Like, no, why aren't you being nice to that
for
guy?
Sure.
You know?
For sure.
And so like, whatever. I mean, like, I just fucking ignore it. You know what? I personally didn't vote either way. I didn't like either of the candidates.
I don't vote either way.
I thought Bernie would have been a great fucking choice. But even then, like, presidents always have something wrong.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be flaws. There's never. You're talking about, supposedly, I mean, if I'm going to believe face value of what I'm told is going on, one person that's running the country, one person can't run, you know, 100 people, let alone, what's the fucking population of our country like? A couple billion? No.
A few million.
No.
I don't have that figure.
No, there's
we have to look it up.
Los Angeles.
And that's why that... Once the states were formed, each state, you know, governs itself.
Right.
States have different laws. And we also have the federal laws that obviously trump state
sure.
laws. But again, yeah, the local responsibilities about, you know, welfare, streets, schools is left for each state to decide for themselves, which I think is a good way of going about it. This way the president doesn't have a hand in every state and what they decide to do.
I personally think that the idea of a government is just a false sense of security.
Well, we need government to enforce contracts and to police, but I think that's about it. You know, the IRS needs to go away. There's no need for the IRS at all.
A lot of people would probably agree with you on that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, eventually the IRS, you know, needs to go away. And the other thing is, what would happen tomorrow if every single person decided, you know what? Fuck the IRS. I'm not going to pay my federal taxes anymore. Every person. I'm not talking about corporations because a lot of them have so many loopholes and write-offs that
right.
the federal tax is irrelevant to them.
Yes.
Normal people, blue-collar people like me and you. What would happen if we all decided, you know what? We're not going to file our taxes. We're not going to pay. Do they even have the manpower to go after every single
American?
I'm not
sure. No, absolutely not. I think that they would devise some sort of fear tactic, freeze our bank accounts, because everybody fucking has one, because we have, you know, been programmed to believe that we can't survive without a bank account. But they would come up with, I mean, that's one
possibility. That would destroy the economy.
Sure, but that is one possibility, but they would come up with some sort of fear tactic to get us all back in line. Because I think that's what's really going on here, is that we are controlled by fear, and we live under this false guise of freedom, you know? When the truth is that we're like not.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, we have to pay fucking taxes. We like have to have a passport to travel outside of our country,
mm-hmm.
you know? I don't know, man. Like, the list goes on, you know? Like, I'm absolutely not educated in this field, and so generally I don't engage in conversations like this because I just don't care. Like, I try not to participate.
Well, tell me, what do you care about? Like, what is your...
Like, my
passion?
Small community, you know, like my group of friends.
Your bubble.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that is what I have an impact on, and that is what I can have an effect on. You know, like, I can't have a fucking effect on gas prices or the meat industry or, you know, fucking veganism or why CrossFit's bullshit or, you know, like, whatever, man. Like, where we shouldn't spend our fucking funds. You know, like, the education system gets far less money than our military. What the fuck's up with that, you know?
And I think when it comes to reading and writing, America falls way down on the list.
It does, sadly.
Definitely.
But once again, we're the greatest country in the world.
According to?
I don't know.
Not according to you.
According to the people that are willing to believe it, for sure.
You know, I want to actually thank you. It was really nice seeing you, and it was great to catch up with you and go over these topics, and hopefully you'll have me on again maybe next week so we could pick up where we left off talk about some more stuff on the news. And
why are you running out of steam?
That's an hour, man.
No, there's no way it's been a fucking hour. It has been, let's open this thing, it's been 30 minutes. So I want to talk about morality again, right? So like the aim of the podcast, and this is like my fourth episode, the aim of the podcast is to like put out content that can help people, right?
Sure.
So like on the topic of morality, like my personal experience has been, so like I'm in a 12-step program.
Okay.
You know, I've been in a 12-step program since I was 22, so it's been almost 9 years.
Remind the listeners how old you are now.
31.
All right, congratulations. I'll be 32 on that.
In November, thank you. And it's been a fantastic, like, it's been a fantastic journey through and through, right? And what I've found is that at different times of the past 9 years, like, I've changed and I've learned things that about myself that I'm no longer comfortable in exhibiting.
For sure.
You know what I mean? And so, like, my own morality has been through trial and error, you know, where, like, there's so much stuff that
sobriety is beautiful.
I'm afraid to, like, put out there because it might offend people, but fuck it. I mean, like,
I was
taught at a very young age to, like, say whatever I could to a girl to get laid.
Who taught you that?
And I'm not going to say, but also,
it wasn't me,
but also it was absolutely, was not you. I'd already learned this by the time we met, but also, honesty is the best policy. For and sure. If I ever get caught with my pants down, lie my ass off. So like, if I run with that, then where the fuck are my morals? You know what I mean? They're really kind of misplaced and askew, you know, but through the process of like working the 12 steps and learning more about myself and really what has happened is like, I have developed a relationship with some sort of higher power with, you know, like a trust that there's this energy in the universe.
Definitely.
That governs laws that I'm
for
not
sure
in control of, you know? But also, like, it's been also developing a relationship with myself and my conscience.
Yes.
You know, and so as I've grown up and I've experienced things and hurt people and, you know, taken mm-hmm. looks at myself, I've learned more of what I'm uncomfortable with and what I'm comfortable with. So, like, I've developed my own morality, you know.
Definitely.
And I mean, I don't know if it's a question of nature or nurture, like, yeah. Was I born this way and I'm slowly getting back to that sense of purity that I personally believe most children have before they're, you know, tainted by, you know, us as adults.
Yes.
Or is it just a matter of like what I think is right and wrong?
Yeah.
You know,
I definitely could relate to that myself. I've been sober for a few months. I definitely don't have as many years under my belt as you do, but I hope one day I will. And even though I'm an atheist and I don't believe in God, something that I can't explain, that I can never put into words or put my finger on, told me that, no, this is not for you. And at the same time, I decided that I wanted to exercise.
Right.
At the same time, I decided to get some help.
Right.
And all three of those things kind of came together like a symphony. You know, if I was a religious person, I would definitely say it was God. But since I'm not, I really can't put my finger on it or explain to you how I did it or why. But yeah, certain circumstances of your life, you know, makes you want to change and makes you want to, you know, live a different life. And I love being sober. It's such a great feeling. You know, there was a lot of anxiety and depression issues that arises from not being sober. But if you're in that vicious cycle, smoking, drinking, whatever you're doing, you really don't realize it until you actually get clean and look at your life and say, you know what? Being sober is a high. Being sober,
yeah. Oh my God,
is better.
Jesus, man. That's the fucking truth.
It is.
I mean, in inexplicable ways, too. You know what I mean? Like one of the most, I had like this very profound spiritual experience a couple weeks ago, where like a lot of stuff was just kind of put in my face, a lot of insecurities, you know, like abandonment issues with my mom and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like there was like a couple lifelong resentments like from my early childhood that were like washed away.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it was a trip, dude. It was a trip.
Letting go of resentment in your life is probably one of the hardest things that I've done, and I'm not even there yet. I work on it daily.
Right.
And
it's a practice, man. I mean, there's this thing called neuroplasticity, and I learned this from one of my mentors, and what it is that, like, there are, I mean, they say that your brain's a muscle, right? And that's kind of like just a surface statement to make a comparison to what most people understand.
Yes.
You do bicep curls and you're going to get bigger arms and stronger arms, you know? But so from what I remember from, you know, this book or article that I read was neuroplasticity, like, talks about there's channels in the brain that that are your thought patterns, right? Okay. And so, like, if you were taught at a very young age to be, like, fearful and untrusting of the world, like, those have grown deeper and deeper and deeper and stronger.
For sure.
As you've gotten older, right? Yes. And for a lot of people, that's true. For me, that was very true for a long time. And so those thoughts of, like, I can't trust this person, or, you know, always looking over my back for whatever reason, are very true, you know? And when I got sober was kind of like a time where I started practicing, like, spiritual beliefs or spiritual fucking whatever, you know, prayer and, like, you know, inventories on myself and whatever. And what also happened was that I came into a community that is full of love and compassion, tenderness, you know, support, like a very good support group, where virtually everybody just wants to see you do well. You know, whatever that looks like for you. Nobody's really told me, hey, you need to do this.
Exactly.
You know, it's more like take a look at yourself and find out what you like and what you don't like and pursue the things that you like, you know? So through that, and, like, realizing, like, I actually have a choice to, like, tell myself, like, when I go to work, I tell myself that I have the best job in the world.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's true or not, yeah. But when I tell myself that all day, it fucking feels like it,
yeah,
you know?
I do the same thing.
And so what's happening is that I've started to create and strengthen these other thought channels in my brain that are more more positive focused or whatever, however that's said. And, like, I just don't think that a lot of people know that, like, they have the option
that
they can think differently. You know what I mean? I was reading this book by this dude, Mark Manson. He wrote, I wasn't reading this book, but he wrote this book called The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Wait, I think I've actually listened to that on Audible.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did.
I heard it's great.
But I didn't finish it, but I did listen to it.
I was reading another thing that he wrote, an article called Self-Awareness. And what he talked about was you have two different minds. You have the conscious mind and the unconscious mind.
Subconscious mind.
Subconscious mind. Thank you. And the subconscious mind is going to be telling you whatever the fuck you're...
It runs your life.
Yeah, whatever your programming is, you know, and stuff like, oh, you're going to start your car without really thinking about it. You're going to fucking put it in drive and, you know, brake and gas without really thinking about it, because these are things that you've done so much that they just become routine behaviors, right?
Of course.
But also that subconscious mind carries into your thoughts, right?
Yes.
So if you're, like, thinking the world's out to get me, or, you know, I can't trust people, you know, I always have to be looking over my back, or, you know, whatever the fuck it might be, I don't know, in my daily life, like, I don't really think about it that much anymore, you know, but it could be something like, so for the longest time, the relationship I had with my dad was full of fucking resentments from me, and I played the victim role, and I hated him, and so every time I would think about my dad, or somebody would say, oh, me and my dad, like, I would just think how bad I have it, right?
For sure.
And through, you know, doing the self-analysis that I've done, like, and the support group that I have, like, I can now, with my conscious mind, observe the thoughts of my subconscious mind and challenge them.
For sure.
And one of the things that he says in this article is that it doesn't matter if the thought's true or not. What matters is if it's helpful.
For sure.
So when I go to work and I'm fucking grinding, drilling holes, getting fucking sawdust and all the holes in my head and my pockets, and I tell myself I have the best job in the world, I don't know if it's true or not. And it doesn't matter, but it's helpful.
Definitely.
You know? And so I try to practice that to the best of my ability, because at the end of the day, it's like, what kind of person am I? You know what I mean? Like, if I go to work and I'm miserable, or I sit in traffic, a traffic is another one. Everybody complains about fucking traffic, right? And when everybody else is complaining about something, I want to be an asshole and be the guy that finds the good in it. Yeah, totally. And, like, I know it's like a total douchebag thing to say or do, but, like, I really learned or practiced a different behavior when it came to traffic. I used to work out in Burbank, and I lived in Winnetka, right? So it was, I had to be to work at 8 in the morning.
It's not that far of a commute.
It was about an hour. It's not far. But when you live in LA,
Burbank.
When you live in LA, man, everything takes way too long to get there. And so what I learned was, if I put that time to good use, I have an hour in the morning. So what can I do? I can listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
I can really enjoy my music. Yeah. I can fucking relax because I'm sitting in traffic and I'm not going anywhere. I could also call people and have conversations with people that, you know, I'm really close with, friends and family and
stuff
like that.
That's exactly what I do in traffic.
And so that's what I do. But, like, so many people just want to complain about it. But why? I mean, like, are you happy? Are they happy? You know what I mean? Like, gas prices, you know? Like, no, I don't want to pay $4 a gallon. What can I do to change the gas price?
Go to your dentist.
But I mean, like, realistically, you know, like, what can I do to change gas prices? Nothing. I could drive less, you know?
Buy an electrical car.
Yeah, I could do that too. But I could also just, like, accept it.
Or you could compare it to some European countries that pay double that price in gas.
That's true, and be grateful.
Exactly.
And those are more tools to use, you know?
For sure.
But yeah, so anyway, I just really like the idea of, like, challenging old beliefs that don't serve us anymore. Whatever the fuck that has to do with secular morality, I don't know. But, you know, that's, like, the shit that I really get off on. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, putting out valuable content that people can
hang their hat on.
Maybe they're in a place in their life where, like, they realize that their thinking probably isn't the best and they need to adapt some new styles of thinking.
And you made a great point. You need to challenge every thought that comes to your mind and say, is this beneficial for me to have? And another way that I do it, first I say to myself, is this true? Is this belief that I hold is true?
Right.
And then I decide if it's beneficial or not.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have a life theory that I use usually to, when I give myself a pep talk, you know, like, I don't want to go to work. God damn it. I don't want to pay this bill. Man, you know, what's the point of life? We keep going in circles.
Yeah, when it gets dark. Yeah, totally.
You know, I realized that, hey, no matter who you are or what you do the same thing. You wake up, you eat, you have a little coffee, you go to work. If you don't go to work and you're lucky enough to be retired, you do some gardening, you have some volunteering to do. You come home, you have some sex if you're lucky enough.
Right.
You eat some food, you watch some TV, some recreational activities, and you go to sleep. You know, there isn't really much more to life than those things, and you need to really embrace it, not really complain about, you know, oh man, I have to go to work today. Let's just say I give you a check every 2 weeks, Justin. You don't have to go to work.
Right.
What would you do?
I'd be fucking miserable. It depends on, you know,
I'd be miserable too.
The amount of the check. But I mean, like,
like Bill Gates is a great, great example.
Right.
He's one of the richest men in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if he's still involved in Microsoft. I don't even think he's involved in Microsoft. He sits on the board, but he's day to day, he's not involved. Right. Him and his wife started a charity to give clean water to people in Africa and stuff like that. This goes to show that even if you are on top of the totem pole and you're very successful, it just comes back to the same thing I was talking about. You wake up, you give your time to a cause or to a job or volunteer, and you come home and you just do it again. And people need to embrace that.
Well, I think that, so one of the things that I strongly advocate is using the English language to your advantage.
Tell me about that.
So for me, what that looks like is using statements like, I get to wake up in a bed. I get to wake up in a bed with a blanket and have three pillows. I don't need three pillows to sleep, but I have them. I get to have, and the key word here is get, right? Like, I don't have to. I don't have to wake up and go to work. I could fucking put a bullet in my head, you know? But I'm choosing not to do that, right? I get to have a choice to have hot or cold water when I brush my teeth, or take a hot or cold shower, or anywhere in between. You know what I mean? And when I think like that, and then, you know, I compare to most people in the world. Because the reality is like, if you live, even if you're like poor in America, you have a
good
better
life
than most of the fucking world's population.
That's for sure.
You know what I mean? Like, we have public transportation. We have, most of us in the country can fucking drink from the tap, even though people want to talk about fluoride and all this shit. Like, most places, they either don't have water, running water, or they have to trek miles to get a couple fucking buckets and carry those buckets.
We are pretty spoiled. Like, as we speak, I'm drinking ionized hydration, 1.5 pH water.
Yeah, right. And I have a fucking $65 hydro flask that goes with me everywhere.
We're so bougie.
Because I fucking need my, you know what I mean? Like, I need to stay hydrated. I have that option. And just to, like, I mean, shit, man. Like, I remember when, it was like 9 years ago, 8 years ago, when Haiti or whatever, like, there was the
earthquake.
The natural disaster. And I was like, complaining to my buddy. And he's like, oh, you think you got problems? Look up Haiti. And I was like, fuck you. Because I just wanted to complain. But I did. And, like, to see the destruction and, like, what those people had to go through is, like, I mean, it's very sad, but it also, like, allows me to have a different perspective on how good I have it.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
And so, yeah, like, I always advocate, like, challenging your own beliefs about what the fuck is really going on. You know, I can go take a shit and flush it down the toilet. I don't have to dig a hole. Yeah. And then I have toilet paper I can use to wipe my ass. Most people don't have it that good, man. Yeah, yeah. Most people do not have it that good.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? Anyway.
So we covered a lot of things. We covered morality, the NFL, patriotism, politics, so being sober. What else am I missing?
Gratitude. Challenging your thinking, neuroplasticity.
Love. A lot peace, of shit. Compassion.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So with that, we're going to wrap it up. And wrapping it up always feels awkward, but, you know, like my dad used to say, no glove, no love. So whatever the fuck that has to do with anything, I don't know. But anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Leave your comments, whether they're, you know, positive or negative. I really don't care. It's always good to get feedback from the listeners. I hope that you found something in here that either made you have feelings about something. Share those with us. Or
and do us a favor. Share this podcast with your friends. If you're on Facebook, just share the link. Spread the word. And spread the word of love, compassion, and peace.
Yeah,
totally. Until next week.
Thank you.